Good evening. I'd like to call to order the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, June 7th, 2023. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all seven council members present this evening. If you would please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The June 12th Water Utility Commission meeting and then the June 15th Stormwater Utility Commission meetings have been canceled. The Budget and Finance Commission will hold their next regular session on June 20th at 4 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. And then the next Town Council regular session is scheduled for June 21st at 6 p.m. here again in the Council Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. We have Mayor and Council reports this evening. Councilmember Jones Ivy has asked for some time, as well as Councilmember Green. Councilmember Jones Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On June 3rd, I attended the celebration, and it was the public release of Jim Craigite, a newly discovered mineral here in Oro Valley. It was named after Jim, who was one of our founding fathers, and it was founded by Warren Lazar. Warren is a longtime Oro Valley volunteer, and he founded in the Santa Catalina Mountains. He took it to a geology team over at U of A, and they've discovered that that mineral only exists here in Arizona in the Santa Catalina Mountains. He decided to name it after Jim Craig because he had a profound effect on his interests in geology. The team was present. I got a chance to meet some wonderful geologists from the university, and they're theorizing that this new organic mineral probably was a result of a catastrophic event where we have dying cacti, and a possible lightning strike created these crystals. They're getting ready to prepare an announcement to the global geology scientific community announcing this very rare find. It was just a real exciting time. This is something that is definitely going to put Oro Valley on the map. Given the theory for its formation, it could only occur here. And it's on display at the Geology Museum at the U of A if you want to go and look at it. And I encourage you to go and see this. It's very unique. I just could not even turn the brain off after I saw it. So please, go see it. We now have something new to celebrate about our community. And who knows, hopefully we'll have geologists from all around the world coming to take a look at what else is in the Santa Catalina Mountains. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones Ivy. Councilmember Green.
Thanks, Joyce. Talking about things to celebrate. I don't know how many of you have been looking for a doctor or a new doctor in this area, and you probably found it's very difficult to do. They are all taking new patients, but they have to have someone leave before they take the new patient. Well, Monday, the mayor and I and Margie Adler visited the Oro Valley Hospital and with the chief executive there, and the chief of nursing, and they informed us that they are working together with Northwest Hospital to create a medical residency in internal medicine as well as in family medicine. That is really important because doctors will tend to settle and open a practice where they train, and they couldn't find a better place to train than here. So it's a very exciting opportunity, something that I'm glad to share with you.
Thank you, Councilmember Green. Other council reports this evening? I'd like to make two reports tonight. Last week, June 1st, I had the opportunity to join our deputy chief and one of our lieutenants, and we drove together to the Northern Arizona Regional Training Academy for the graduation of our two newest officers. And they are Dakota Diego Palma and Julio Alexandro Valencia. So these two young men are the newest officers to our police department. Their families were present for this important event in these two young men's lives, their wives. It was a wonderful event, and they have begun their work in the department, and I believe they're in a continuing training for several weeks as they transition into full-time duty. So we're really grateful to have these two new officers join our department. I'd like to invite our interim town manager, Mr. Chris Cornelison, if he would join me down here at the front. Test. So many, if you don't know, Mr. Cornelison, Chris, I won't bite. Mr. Cornelison has been serving as our interim town manager for several months, and on behalf of the council, I wanted to express publicly our appreciation for Mr. Cornelison's exemplary service that he's provided to our town. I'd like to just highlight a few of the accomplishments during Mr. Cornelison's tenure as our interim town manager. Of course, he helped with the recruitment of our town manager. When I say helped with that, really at arm's length, one thing I appreciated about Mr. Cornelison is that he really turned that over to the Human Resources Department. But nevertheless, he played an important role. We also completed projects at the Conquistador Golf with the new irrigation system and also the tennis and pickleball courts. We had ribbon cuttings to mark those important project conclusion of those important projects. He led us through our strategic leadership planning process for 2024-25. He was recognized for the 40 Under 40 Award. These are young men and women age 40 or younger that are recognized for their professional accomplishments. And so Chris joined that prestigious group. He's also helped with the advancement of the Naranja Park Project, the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve Master Plan. He led the staff and council with the 23-24 budget, and also the general plan community engagement plan. And I could go on, but I won't. But I did want to recognize a few of these important accomplishments. And Mr. Chris, I'm going to say Chris. Chris, I was making some business visits recently. One of those visits was to the spa well, which is part of the Hilton. And it's a wonderful facility. And I was impressed with all the services that they offer. In fact, one of the things, they took me and showed me one of the rooms, and it's for couples serenity. And I realize that a job like this that is so demanding that it requires, of course, the support of your wife and family. And I thought there could be nothing better than that says relaxation awaits you. And I think after several months as our interim town manager, one thing you could probably use is some relaxation. So and enjoy that in the coming weeks. But on behalf of the council, thank you so much for your service. You may or may not know, but our new town manager, Jeff Wilkins, he'll begin Monday. That's one of the reasons we're recognizing Chris this evening. Would you like to take the mic?
I'll never turn down an opportunity. Well, thank you very, very much, Mayor. That's very kind of you and unexpected, and have definitely never experienced this, so that'll be a new experience with my wife, and I'm sure she'll appreciate that, and that's very kind and generous. Where'd you go? Oh, behind the wall. All right. Thank you. And more importantly, thank you all to the council for giving me the opportunity to work with you all a lot more closely. I think we've accomplished a lot of things, and not just a few months. It's been nine, but it's gone well, and I think it's nice to see a lot of these projects and challenges and community opportunities come to fruition and make progress. And so I just really want to thank you all for having the faith and trust in me. And then obviously it's really our executive leadership team and staff that they do all the hard work. And so I appreciate all of you. And maybe I don't know that I can take you on with this, but it'll be a new bonding opportunity, but I won't do that. So thank you very much.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yep, thanks. Just two short notes. The first note is, and I'll use his first name since we're really congratulating, Chris is just returning to his position as our deputy town manager. He stepped out of that to be the interim town manager, and now he's going to still be with us once again in his prior role. And the other thing is, I think there was a little misunderstanding that spa relaxation is for your two children, not for you and your wife.
All right. Any other comments, Council? With that, we'll go to Mr. Cornelison's report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have one report as a follow-up from the last Council meeting. We had two gentlemen speak at the call to the audience regarding our Silver Sneakers and Renew Active program. And so I just want to let the Council know, as Mr. Mayor, I believe you were the one that asked me to look into it. And so I do have a meeting with staff next week, and we're going to dive into the issues and see what kind of solutions that we can come up with. I've also been in touch with those two individuals about the where we stand, and also I'll continue to work with them and keep them updated next week as well. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. The agenda will remain as posted. We do have some blue cards for call to audience. We'll go to call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. Our first blue card is Ray Dissinger, and if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Thank you.
Mayor and Town Council, I am Ray Dissinger, 25-year resident of Oro Valley, and currently I'm the president of the Elkhorn Conquistador Homeowners Association. I'm here tonight speaking for the 227 homes and three OHOAs that surround the Push Ridge Golf Course. And we are also signatories on the Push Ridge 9 Golf Agreement. If you remember, that agreement was a council decision and a council motion to reopen the Push Ridge course and to operate it as a golf course for three minimum and up to 5 years. Okay. It's clear that the intent of the parties at that point was to operate as a continue golf operations there, and that the town would not close and or repurpose the course. During those discussions, there was no suggestion of disc golf or any other use of the golf course during the extent of that agreement. In April, town staff came to the HOAs wanting to discuss push disc golf at Push Ridge during this summer. They stated it was for this summer only, 2023, and that it would have no impact on golf operations. We had discussions with them to address. We had concerns about security and safety and the operation itself. And we requested that we have an addendum to our agreement to codify those discussions. Town staff's position was that there was no addendum required, and then they unilaterally moved ahead with disc golf. As a matter of fact, the first day of play was yesterday. Okay. Clearly, disc golf is a repurposing of the course. All right, which is counter to our original agreement. It's also counter to the initial motion by the town council that directed to open as a golf course. We sent in mail this last week to the mayor and all the town council members and to the town manager a letter expressing our concern about the breach of agreement and that what our position was. Okay, any use other than golf at Push Ridge, we believe, requires requires town council approval and an addendum to the agreement. Okay. At this point, we are unaware of any town council approval of a change of use to allow disc golf at Push Ridge this summer. If there has been an approval, then we will work with the town staff to draft the required addendum to our agreement. If there is not approval for a change of use, then we request that the town council provide guidance to town staff on how they should deal with the breach of the agreement. We thank you for your consideration and your time, and we thank you more than anything for the opening of the Push Ridge course. It's truly a unique asset to the town of Oro Valley, and it's been a phenomenal success. We concluded our second year, profitable year, with over 1,600 rounds played. We certainly look forward to working with the town for the long-range viability of golf at Push Ridge. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Cornelison, can we, the council, receive a report in terms of just updating us about the discussions that, not at this, but some of
the... Absolutely, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, thanks. Mr. Chuck Crowley.
Mayor Winfield and the members of the town council. My name is Chuck Crowley. I'm a resident of Oro Valley, and I will be reading a statement from Tony D'Angelo, also a resident of Oro Valley and the president of the Push Ridge, Friends of Push Ridge Golf. I am here to ask for clarification as to who is responsible for the decision to transform the Push Ridge Golf Course into a disc golf course. Contrary to staff interpretation, golf and disc golf are two very different sports. Disc golf is only mentioned in the Parks and Recreation Master Plan as a potential activity in the area designated as Conservation Area Trail Park. Push Ridge Golf is specifically included in the definition of a single-use facility. Was any Conservation Area Trail Park considered for disc golf? Because Push Ridge Golf is designed as a simple-use area, it would seem regulations require the town council to approve disc golf as a related use. When did you vote to establish disc golf as a related use? Finally, it appears that the Tucson Disc Golf Club is the driving force to place disc golf at Push Ridge. Their Facebook page exclaims that they have been meeting monthly with your staff for over a year and a half to negotiate this agreement. They thank a member of their club who happens to be a manager within your Parks and Recreation Department for making this happen. Is the town council aware of this special relationship between the Tucson Disc Golf Club and your town council? Why wouldn't the town have at least introduced their negotiation partners to the residents living adjacent to the facility? There is no precedent for a disc golf course this close to homes.
Given the fact that the Tucson Disc Golf Course has been working on this for a year and a half and funded the equipment installation, it's not surprising that they make no reference to the stated position of your Parks and Recreation Department that this is a test and will only be operational for the next 4 months. Why would they invest this much? Is the expectation to operate both at the same time in the fall, or the true intention to replace golf with disc golf on a permanent basis? Why have you spent a year and a half on disc golf, and as far as I know, very little time exploring how to make the golf course environmentally sustainable via turf reduction, improved water efficiency, or bringing reclaimed water to the facility? And the staff was directed in your approved 2/17/2021 motion to reopen the golf course. There was no direction in that motion to look at alternative uses. Did the town council choose golf for Push Ridge, or did you just defer to your staff? Thank you for your time.
Ann Young.
Good evening. My name is Ann Young. I live in Oro Valley. I'm here on my own behalf and the behalf of my many, many neighbors who cannot come tonight. I just want to reiterate our feeling that we're living under a dark, dark cloud as long as OVCN continues to want to build their 70,000-foot square athletic compound in our own backyard. So I would like to just remind you, even though it'll be a few months maybe before the church comes back with their new ideas. Thanks so much. It is a dark cloud that I especially feel I live under. Thank you.
Tim Terrace.
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members and staff. My name is Tim Terrace, and I live at 9291 North Calle Buena Vista. I'm a resident of the town. I am speaking tonight against the OVCN rezone request. First of all, there are two things that are more difficult than making a call to audience speech: climbing a wall which is leaning towards you and kissing someone who is leaning away from you. As for the Concordia Buena Vista group, constantly coming up with new ideas on the same concept belies the question, what exactly are we doing? As we approach 3 years in this public effort, what do we have? Hundreds of letters, emails, television interviews, newspaper articles, social media, and speeches describing the negative effect of the applicant's proposal. The majority consensus seems to be, why here? Meanwhile, the applicant continues to try to put 10 pounds of complex into a 5-pound neighborhood, gerrymandering the size and shape of the pad request in an attempt to avoid the affected neighbor's wishes, multiple traffic studies submitted and rejected, trying to get the numbers to satisfy the code as opposed to the reality of the situation, and planning and zoning using the word incompatible to describe the proposal has left the applicant undeterred. Apparently, they believe this is the only place on earth for their sports complex. And as we all know, that's ludicrous. Neighbors at this point have spent thousands of dollars and hundreds of man hours to prevent an unsolicited and permanent change to their lives and the destruction of their residential neighborhood, a historic and valued part of our town. In other words, the neighbors' financial support for their favorite charities and organizations and scholarships for youth and other forms of voluntary giving of their choice have been unnecessarily and involuntarily diverted in order to oppose the applicant's initiative. This is just not right on any level in our neighborhood. Oh, one other thing I just remembered. I cannot stand people who disagree with me on the issue of Roe versus Wade, which I believe is really about the proper way to cross a lake. Thank you.
Anthony Ferrara.
My name is Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, council members. My name is Anthony Ferrara, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I have notes this time because I think I failed to identify myself last time. If it comes before you, I encourage you to vote no on the rezoning request proposed by the Oro Valley Church of the Nazarene. The proposed project is not compatible with the neighborhood. It will do permanent and irreparable harm to the neighborhood. Thank you.
Tricia Tozier.
Hello, Council. My name is Tricia Tozier. I live in Oro Valley for the last 23 years. I live down at the golf course. So this isn't the church project isn't in my backyard. So I'm not a NIMBY, but I feel that the church project is in the town's backyard. This is an area that has horses. I happen to have a horse that is catacornered from there. I ride early morning or in the evening, and I know all the kids in the prams. There's Nora and Rachel and Jamie that go by, and we talk to them, and they pet the horse. I know a lot of the joggers, even though they have the things in their ears. There's a lady that jogs her mini horse down the road. We keep the nice path adjacent to our fence clear so that people can use that. Those are our sports, and we are town members. And I feel that to make a sports field for themselves in our area is just not fair. Like I said, there's a lot of sports in this area. I ride. People push the prams. Kids play. The cyclists, or there's a lot of cyclists. And people jog down the street, and there's dog walkers. So I ask, whose sports are more important, your town's or the church? Thank you.
Paul Parisi.
Morning, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm Paul Parisi. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I've lived here since 1973, a year before it became a town. And I've seen some changes here. I live north of McGee, east of Oracle, and there was still grazing cattle on Push Ridge when my house was built. You know, when my neighbors started building houses, I didn't want them there. I liked those cows coming back, but I didn't own that property. And as long as, you know, the town was growing, I put up with it, you know. But I was on the town council in the 1990s. I had the honor to sit where you're sitting now. And in 1995, a developer wanted to build an apartment complex, and the neighbors went crazy. In fact, one even sued the town to stop it. So we used some Western negotiation, and we bought the property from the apartment complex owner. And that property now is Riverfront Park. Do you know that people came to the town council and protested that they didn't want traffic on Lambert Lane? Some of the people didn't even live near there. That they didn't want lighted fields because light pollution. But we went ahead and did that anyway. When I came on the town council, there was 14,000 people in Oro Valley. In 2000, I think it was close to 40,000 or something. And we put up as the council people complaining about growth. Every school, we only had, CDO was the only school, all right? All the schools, Honeybee Canyon, we had this town council chambers filled with people to stop Honeybee Canyon. But this park is similar to what's going on at Church of Nazarene. I understand the neighbor's complaint, just like I when I lived in an area that was rural. But the town must continue to grow, and property owners' rights are very important, just like neighbors have a say in what goes on. Thank you.
I have point of order.
No, may I?
Okay, Councilmember Solomon.
According to the call of the audience, at the end of the call of the audience, the councilmember may ask that a matter be placed on future agenda. So I request that for the next council meeting, the agenda item be added of discussion and possible action on the use of the Push Ridge Golf Course.
I would second that recommendation.
I have no other blue cards for call to audience. I'm going to close call to audience. We'll go to presentations. And Mr. Standish, if you'll read the first item.
Presentation and possible discussion regarding the town's five-year financial forecast through fiscal year 2028-29.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. This evening, Deputy Finance Director Ms. Gomez will present this item this evening. And following the presentation, the questions and discussion from council. Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Gomez.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present our five-year financial forecast. We'll jump right in. We are presenting our forecast for our main tax-based funds, our general fund, highway fund, capital fund, and the community center fund. Our five-year forecast is a snapshot based on information that's currently known to us. It does serve as a planning document for future budgets. We look to it throughout the fiscal year, and while we're working through the budget process, it is updated annually and presented to council, and it is expected that it would change, sometimes drastically, each year, depending on new CIP projects, changes to our CIP plan, and other changes to trends and costs. So it is a fluid document. Some of the sources that we rely on for our forecast, the University of Arizona, their Eller College Forecasting Department, the Joint Legislative Budget Committee with the state, the Arizona Department of Transportation for gas tax and HERF projections, and then the knowledge, expertise, and professional judgment of town management and staff. So it is a team effort. I did mean to recognize at the outset the hard work that's done on our forecast by our senior budget analyst, Chris Hutchison. So I did just want to call him out and say thank you. He's really the numbers person and does a lot of very detailed work on preparing our forecast. So, all right, we'll start with our general fund. Some of the assumptions for our sources. We are assuming a continued economic recovery, stable economic setting with no major downturns. All our revenue sources are at or above levels pre-pandemic. So pre-COVID, we continue to assume growth of 3 to 5%, so fairly conservative in most of our local sales tax categories. Our construction sales tax and our permitting revenues reflect continued stable activity in the near term, and then we do have some slight declines that we've forecasted in the outer years, and that's just due to approaching build-out slowly and reducing available land for development. Our commercial permitting forecast is fairly conservative based on information that's currently known to us. We do have the chart for our single-family residential permits you can see there. This is working in tandem with our Community and Economic Development Department to forecast out those projected permitting activities. So you can see a bit of a bump there in the mid-years for the projection and then dropping slightly after that. State shared revenues, we do have our one-time increase next fiscal year that's due to a change in the state's allocation for income taxes from 15% to 18%. That is just a one-time bump that we're going to see because thereafter we're going to see the impacts of the income tax rate reductions and a cap of 2.5% after that. Here's the forecast for the general fund sources. So you can see taxes, healthy growth there throughout the forecast. We do have a bit of a slump there in fiscal year 27-28, and that's just due to some of that commercial construction activity I was mentioning. State shared revenues, you can see those. You can see the bump that's due to the income tax, and then a bit of a drop thereafter, and then stable growth. And then the rest of our categories, some of the smaller categories, charges for services generally grows with population growth. Our licenses and permits is our forecast that we've worked on with CED. And then some of our other revenues, intergovernmental, the lion's share of that is our RTA reimbursement for transit operations. We have some of our grant revenues. Miscellaneous is mostly our in-lieu income that we collect, our bed tax in-lieu income. And then we have our fines, which isn't much of the general fund, and it's pretty stable year after year. And then our interest income revenues there for total forecast. Moving on to the uses, assumptions for the general fund, our employee pay adjustments and police step increases are included in each year of the forecast. We do include modest capacity for new FTEs each year. We do acknowledge that that's a reality, that we are going to have some new bodies as the town continues to grow, so that is included. We do have continued capacity for normal increases in some of our benefit costs, employee-related personnel or ERE costs. We do forecast that we will have those continued elevated PSPRS payments through fiscal year 24-25. And then thereafter, we will see about a 40% decrease is what we're expecting as we see the benefit of our payoff for our unfunded liability. O&M is fairly lean. It does assume current service levels for the general fund. And then our transfers out for CIP projects, we do assume first and foremost our 5% of our sales tax collections per town financial policies, plus any fund balance that we've forecasted over your 30% reserve policy is included as a transfer to capital projects per our policies. Here's the forecast chart for the uses. You can see the personnel, the increases there attributable to the pay adjustments, step increases, benefits, some new FTEs, et cetera. The O&M and capital you see there. Our capital is fairly lean. You can see in the outer years, we've got our next year's forecast of about $1.4 million. Then we drop it down to about $500,000 to $600,000. We'll have to manage to that. That is a bit lean, as I said, and this doesn't mean that new requests couldn't come up, new one-time items that we would end up including in those future years. You can see our transfers, fairly significant. Those are our transfers to CIP and then debt service as well that the general fund pays. You can see our surplus or use of fund balance, that planned drawdown in the near term, and then stable in the outer years. And you can see our reserve stays at least 30% of our expenditures per council's policy. Here's the chart for the general fund. We did include that reserve notation at 30%, so you can kind of gauge where we're at. Again, the planned drawdown of fund balance there in the near term, and then a stable forecast throughout the years. Moving on to the highway fund, as I mentioned, we use the Arizona Department of Transportation for our HERF forecast. It's about 3.4 to 3.6%. That's pretty standard in terms of what they're forecasting throughout the next few years. All of our smaller other revenue sources in the fund are assumed at modest and incremental growth. We will require transfers in from the capital fund to supplement HERF revenues. We had mentioned this previously. We are going to be looking at some sizable capital costs in the forecast for the highway fund. So it is going to require some funding, whether that's infused from the capital fund or the general fund. You can see we've listed out some of those major projects that are coming forward to us in the next few years. We did not include the La Cañada bridge deck repair in the capital, and that's only because we are applying for outside federal funding on that project. So. Here's the chart, or the table, I guess I should say, for the sources for the highway fund. You can see, obviously, our HERF revenues are the lion's share of what's collected in this fund, and then we have some of our smaller categories, our licenses and permits and interest income. And then you can see those transfers from the capital fund for additional funding needed for capital. The assumptions for spending in the highway fund, the personnel and O&M reflect similar assumptions to that of the general fund. We do prioritize our payment preservation program in the fund, and that's included at 2.5 to 2.8. So we do assume that higher cost for that program continues throughout the forecast. And then our capital outlay reflects our 10-year tentative CIP schedule, and that's obviously subject to change. Here's the forecast for the uses in the highway fund. You can see that capital there included as measured with the 10-year CIP, and then personnel and O&M assumptions similar to that of the general fund. But stable overall in the highway fund, and we end up with a balance of about 2.7 at the end of the five-year period. So there may be some opportunity, and we will you know, likely draw as much as we need in the highway fund first, based on available funding in there, before we have to tap into what's needed from the capital fund or general fund. So, and then you can see our chart for the highway fund, a little bit of a drop in fund balance that's planned, and then stable and increasing a bit there through the forecast. Moving on to the capital fund, some of the sources that the capital fund relies on, obviously general fund transfers, number one, but also we designate vehicle reserves for our vehicle replacements that post to this fund, and then any bond proceeds if we issue bonds for capital projects, and then grants for any capital projects as well. We do have some miscellaneous revenues in the capital fund when we sell our vehicles or we receive recoveries from insurance claims. Those are posted in the capital fund as well to match where the vehicle costs are. Non-enterprise vehicle reserves are charged to the general fund, as I mentioned, based on the replacement cost of the vehicle. So that is included in the forecast. And then transfers from the general fund, as I mentioned, fairly sizable, 5% of sales tax at least, and then any excess fund balance over the general fund's 30% reserve policy. Here's a chart for the sources in the capital fund. You can see, obviously, the big chunk of what's infused in this fund is transfers from the general fund. But you can see in the current year, we've got that transfer from the community center fund for the irrigation project. And some of the smaller categories you see here, general fund reserve, vehicle reserves being in here as well. For the uses, some of the assumptions in the capital fund, we do have two temporary CIP project managers in the forecast, just one after next fiscal year. And then as those projects wrap up, we do remove those personnel costs from the forecast thereafter. Our capital outlay in the fund reflects the 10-year tentative CIP schedule. It does exclude the new police station pending an identified funding source. We do have new vehicle purchases in the forecast. We wanted to make sure those were included. Obviously, if we have new staff come on board, they will need new vehicles, so that is included in the forecast. We do have inflation assumed as well for some of those vehicle costs based on what we're currently seeing. And then you'll see the transfers out to the highway fund that we mentioned for those roadway CIP projects. Here's the uses for the capital fund and the ending fund balance. You can see the personnel drops off there after fiscal year 25-26. Our capital outlay figures are per the 10-year schedule. And then the transfers to the highway fund that I mentioned, landing at a fund balance of about $4.2 million at the end of the forecast period. Here's a chart for the capital fund. It is a planned drawdown of fund balance as we wrap up what we have there in the CIP, the Naranja Park and the bond projects, and then a stable fund balance thereafter. And last but not least, the community center fund, some of our assumptions for the sources. So our local sales tax projections follow the same growth pattern as the general fund for the categories that post to the community center fund. Operations are assumed on 18 holes for 6 months next fiscal year as we finish up the irrigation project. We were conservative in our growth forecast for parks and recreation fitness revenues to account for potential discretionary decreases that we may see as a result of continued inflation. And then our HOA contributions, those five-year agreements do end after fiscal year 24-25. So here's the sources table for the Community Center Fund. You can see the taxes there, continued healthy growth, which is helping to fund the capital needs in the Community Center Fund and keep the fund whole. Charges for services, those are the forecasts from the Gulf contractor. So healthy growth you see there. You see the bump in fiscal year 24-25 as the irrigation project wraps up, and about 3% growth thereafter. And then some of the smaller categories in there, miscellaneous is those HOA contributions that I mentioned, and then our interest income. The assumptions on the uses, personnel and O&M figures, again, reflect assumptions that we included in the general fund, so those are carried into this fund as well. We have our contracted expenditures do include PUSH. Capital will reflect our 10-year CIP schedule. And we have also included $100,000 annually for continued maintenance capital needs for the Vistosa Trails Nature Preserve. And in addition, we do include about $150,000 each year for other building improvements and non-CIP operating capital needs for the community center that may arise. The debt service transfers are for the parks and recreation bonds. That's the big chunk of it, but also our energy efficiency bonds. Here's the table for the community center fund, the uses and the ending fund balance. You can see the O&M that would include the contracted expenditures, our capital forecast per our schedule. Debt service is the principal and interest due on leases that post to the fund. And then you can see the transfers out, the bulk of that being the parks and recreation bonds, but also the energy efficiency bonds. And then you can see our fund balance there ending at the end of the forecast period with about a $4.8 million balance in the community center fund. Here's the chart for the community center fund. You can see that drawdown into fiscal year 23-24. That's due to the irrigation, cost that we had included as a transfer out to the capital fund, and then stable fund balance and growing a bit there towards the outer years of the forecast. And with that, we'll take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. We appreciate your presentation this evening on the five-year forecast and acknowledge Mr. Hutchinson's work as well. We'll open it to questions from council. Councilmember Green.
Thank you for your presentation. the HERF taxes comes primarily from gas, right? What adjustment is being made for those individuals who are electing to buy electric cars, and how will they help fund the highways?
That is a good question. Yeah, the forecast from Arizona Department of Transportation is what we rely on. They would include those assumptions in their forecast. It's not only the gas tax, it's also some of the vehicle license tax revenues right. that are in there as well. That's definitely something that we're going to continue to need to watch and plan for as we go through the forecast for those impacts.
One follow-up, if I may. How solid are the estimates for Vistosa Trails in terms of maintenance and so forth? Is that just a guess, or we have some solid numbers to back that up?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Green, that is going to remain to be seen a little bit. I think it's a good thing that we're including at least that $100,000 as a placeholder, and we do include that each fiscal year. But we're still wrapping up the master plan. We'll have to see what the final results of that are.
So that $100,000 guesstimate, really a placeholder, I think you said.
That's
Thank
true.
You.
Yes.
Other questions? Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez and Mr. Hutchinson, for your work. Could you please open the file attachment general fund assumptions, please? Regarding local sales taxes, the first item is we assume revenues from development at the Oral Valley Marketplace. Can you share with us what revenues and why we believe the revenues will be at that level?
Sure. Yes, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. So we did include the most conservative concept from the forecast for the marketplace just to stay conservative. But that does include some permitting activity and construction sales tax. Those primarily hit per that concept 5 that we assumed in fiscal years 24-25 and 25-26. Some into 26-27 as well is really when that ramps up. You see the apartments and the hotel assumptions included.
Do we have a round figure for the total amount?
Sure. If you'd bear with me for just a minute. I do have those highlighted in our forecast because I thought that that might be asked. Okay, so yes, the bulk of those revenues are actually assumed in fiscal year 25-26 and 26-27. So for example, with construction sales tax, we have about $1.1 million included in fiscal year 25-26 and then about $2 million in 26-27. And then it drops off to about $500,000 thereafter. Included in some of the permitting revenues, let me just jump down to those real quick. Lion's share again in fiscal year 25-26 and 26-27, $400,000 in that first fiscal year, and then $600,000 thereafter, and then it drops to about $200,000 for the final 2 years of the forecast.
Did I hear correctly about $1 million for fiscal year 25-26?
Yes, that's correct.
That's 4%. So $25 million in construction approximately. Thank you. And regarding uses assumptions, are there any assumptions made regarding a possible economic development agreement that would decrease our revenues, you know, beyond what we would assume if we collected 100% of them? Has any thinking on that been done?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, no. No costs are included per an economic development agreement. What might be included as part of that would be impact fees, for example. Those would impact those particular fees, not the general fund. But no, no assumptions related to any economic development agreement have been included.
Thank you. Could we go to general fund sources?
Mr. Mayor, if I may clarify, Councilmember Bowen, on the 4%, the calculation, I believe, Ms. Gomez can correct me or Dave, is 4% of 65% of the construction valuation. So it's not just 4% of the construction valuation.
That's correct, yes. And it was the sources slide? Oh, here we go.
Sources, please.
The general fund forecast.
So is it correct that our fiscal year 23-24 tentative for taxes is actually lower than what we estimate for this year?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's due to construction sales tax.
Do you know approximately when the last time we actually saw a drop year over year in sales tax?
Construction, we're seeing a current year drop in construction sales tax.
Oh, pardon me. I could have asked the question more clearly. I'm asking about the top line, which is not just construction sales tax, but all taxes.
Oh, overall, I would have to look at that. I would have to pull that and get back to you. I can. You're looking for the last time of the fiscal year total local sales tax collections dropped? Okay. I can pull that for
you. Yes, because I'd like to note those have gone up by at least several million a year, every year for the last 3 years. So that would be a significant drop. Okay. And the next question I have is regarding the highway fund sources. Now, we have been talking for the last few months about transfers from the capital fund to the highway fund. I'm just curious, in the forecast for 24-25 through 26-27, how do we arrive at $4 million being the appropriate amount to move over? Do we tie it in some way to the CIP work or the work we expect to do that year? I mean, it's a very round number and we get it 3 years in a row. Can you give us some insight into that?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, it is tied roughly to our 10-year CIP. It's not, obviously, it's a round number just for purposes of kind of keeping it at clean round numbers, but it is tied to the projects and the fiscal years that those projects are planned in currently.
And then regarding the La Cañada Bridge, there has been a statement made that we took it out of the forecast. even though it's over $7 million, in the anticipation that there may be federal grant money to help us with that construction. What's the progress? What's the status of obtaining federal grant money for the La Cañada Bridge?
I'm going to defer that question to Mr. Kiesler.
So, Mayor and Council Member Bowen, right now it's not progressed because the bridge is in too good a shape. The problem with the federal funding is the bridge really has to go down in condition before we're truly eligible. Now, we are going after some federal funding on the Tangerine Bridge right now. It's a state and federal, I believe. I don't know if Ms. Cornells. Okay. We're going for a grant on that one. We are, again, as we become available for funding to get outside sources, we will, but it's just the bridge is just in too good a shape right now. They fund other bridges ahead of us.
Can you quantify that to us in terms of a rating? Is it a 6, a 7, a 5?
I don't have that information with me right now, but I can put a council report together on that. In fact, we are looking at from ADOT, we get annual reports. And those annual reports are broken up into different sections of the ratings of each bridge. And they pinpoint different little pieces to address and fix. So we are putting together a master plan with regard to all those little fixes that ADOT has pointed out over the years. And we don't have anything that has been critical for as long as I've been here. And again, until you get to those critical states, but we can put all that information together. In fact, we're working on that right now.
And how recent is our last inspection date? I believe we heard about a month ago that they're inspected every 2 years. What is the vintage? What year is our last inspection for our bridges?
It was just literally a couple months ago.
Then this would be a really good opportunity to ask, what's the rating on the First Avenue Bridge, which was 5 as of 2 years ago?
Yeah, now I'll bring that. I don't have it with me right now, but I'll bring that forward.
Thank you. Regarding the acquisition of federal funds to support us in our critical infrastructure, can you kind of describe for us, you know, what types of grants you go after, how long does it take to get them, and how soon do you know whether or not you're going to get the money?
That's a whole dissertation with regard to that. There's different avenues. The state offers money, the feds offer money, based on the criticality of the condition of the bridge. So, again, I can bundle that all up in a comprehensive council report for council on that particular issue. It's a long and involved issue, and it's not something that I have easy pat answers for this evening.
But when the state or the federal government offers money, is that a guarantee? For example, if you find yourself in a position where you've got a 4,
right,
are you able to guarantee you get the money, or are you still applying at that point?
We're always applying, so it's always competitive. And that's why I'm saying our bridges are in too good a condition that that competitive funding right now, there's a finite amount of money, and that money goes to the critical bridges, the bridges that are substandard.
Okay, then I'll ask, you know, sort of the worst-case scenario question. What if we can't get to the front of the line for federal funding and, you know, the federal timeline for construction when we actually need to fix a bridge? Do we end up having to simply pay for it ourselves, or is there some kind of federal or state backstop? No town should be in this position of having to, you know, fix a bridge that they can't afford to fix.
Well, there's also regional funding as well, and we would go to the PAG region if that was possible. We've used PAG money before to actually build bridges. So the Pushview Bridge came from PAG funding. So we will explore every avenue. Now, I know that doesn't directly answer your question. There are several things that we need to do, and one of the key things that we need to do is we just need to stay up on the maintenance of our bridges, and that's one thing that we do, is stay up on that maintenance. These bridges have a 40, 50-year life to them, and as long as you stay up on that maintenance, they will last for a very, very long time.
Okay, but my understanding is most of these bridges we're planning in the first half of the 10-year CIP. So these are 2, 3, 4 year out, not a long way out, but, you know, pretty close. Isn't that correct?
Right. So what we were doing is and I think I mentioned this before the last time that this subject came up, we were looking at the aesthetics and the usability of the bridge deck. So if the wear is creating potholes, unattended, those become worse issues. Now, what we're doing right now is we're doing spot fixes on the bridges. That spot fix, there's an aesthetic issue and there's a ride issue. Now, if we could go ahead and remill and put a new bridge surface down, not only does that help with the longevity of the bridge, but it also makes a nicer bridge for the community. That's what got us on this, pardon the pun, the road a few years ago when we first put in for CIP for the bridge deck repairs. We went ahead and after that was approved through council, we were bidding it, and we found that the bids were coming in way higher than we expected, and that's when we pulled the plug on it because it wasn't a structural issue. It was a ride and an aesthetic issue.
Now, you've mentioned two different things that sound kind of similar, and that's, you know, remilling and bridge deck repair or bridge deck replacement. Are those the same thing
that's
or
the
are
same
they
thing.
Distinctly different?
That's the same thing. So you shave off the top layer of the concrete on the bridge, and you put new concrete down. Some of our bridges, Push View, we did a few years ago, which was an asphalt surface.
Councilmember Bowen, we're at about almost 14 minutes at this question period. If I could go to
point of order, Mr. Mayor, there's no motion on the floor. We asked specifically about whether there's a 10-minute time limit, and that applies to when a motion's on the floor. That's all.
I understand about that. That there's not a motion on the floor. It's really just a matter of checking in with other council members, more of a matter of respect than anything. I'm going to come back to you. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, if I may just jump in really quickly and answer Councilmember Bowen's question regarding local sales tax. So the last time that the town had a decline in local sales tax year over year was between 2015 and 2016.
Thank you.
Other questions? Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. I wanted to follow up with a couple of the questions about the Oro Valley Marketplace, and you mentioned the impact fees, and I wanted to know how are the impact fees included in the five-year forecast? Because there's construction, sales taxes, and permitting fees.
Mr. Mayor, fees. Vice Mayor, I may have caused some confusion there, but what I was getting at was if an economic development agreement comes forward that changes the impact fees or the collection of those impact fees, that would impact those particular restricted funds and not the five-year forecast. So,
okay, but wouldn't impact fees impact the five-year forecast as well?
It would for that particular impact fee fund. So let's say, you know, roadway, and I'm just making this up. This is not based on anything, but let's say roadway impact fees were waived or something to that effect. That would impact the roadway impact fee fund. That would have nothing to do with our forecast for the general fund, the highway fund, capital, or community center fund.
Okay, except that we have to replace impact fees. Isn't that correct?
If we had a project that was planned in the impact fee fund that, you know, as a result of those waived fees, maybe we might have to look at other sources besides the impact fees, then I guess that could potentially be something that we would need to address. But in terms of, you know, the revenues being collected, it would be those impact fee funds in particular.
Okay, thank you. So this five-year forecast generally doesn't include impact fee funds.
It does not.
Okay, thank you. That helps clarify that. And then on the PSPRS, you mentioned how there will be, in a couple of years, a 40% decrease in our payment approximately. About how much money does that 40% decrease represent?
Sure. Bear with me just a minute. I can pull that up.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Gomez. Okay, that is about a $1.4 million decrease.
Okay. So we'll have about $1.4 million additional available to spend in those outer years because of that PSPRS prepayment?
I think that's fair, yes.
Okay. Okay, thank you. That's all my questions for now. Thank you for your presentation and work on this, Ms. Gomez.
You're welcome.
Other questions? Councilmember Nicholson?
Yeah, I had a same question about the elevated PSPRS payments. What was that, or why were we having elevated payments the first few years? Is that part of the bond, or...
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, that's just based on what we were currently experiencing before we paid down our unfunded liability. So it takes a while with the actuarial reports for those payments to line up and reduce our required contributions to get to our funding desired funding level. So if our CFO, Mr. Gephardt, wants to speak to that further, I will let him. But that's what that's attributable to, really.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson. So this really is a product of the PSPRS pension funding policy, which is also before you this evening. As the town follows the policy, the current policy in effect, our goal is to get up to 110% funded before we start dialing back those payments, those elevated payments. So that's just what the policy calls for.
And was that a council decision to go to 110%, or is that a state?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, that is a council adopted policy. The policy was adopted last fiscal year.
Thanks.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember your last name, so please tell me. Gomez. I have to apologize. I'm used to calling everybody by their first name. I'm looking at the capital fund. If you could go to that particular page in the forecast. Okay, it's the slide that looks like this.
The table.
Thank you. As I was looking at this, I'm noticing that we have personnel costs through 25-26, and I'm making the assumption that that's going to be the CIP personnel that's going to be brought on for, what is their tenure going to be, 2 years?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, yes, those are temporary staff that were brought on board for some of our CIP projects, particularly the bond projects. Mm-hmm. So as those projects wrap up, those temporary positions are assumed to roll off the forecast for those outer years.
Now, does that also include the O&M that we're starting, that was last year, the 4,162, because I'm not seeing any for the...
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, that may be attributable to that, but we also incur some O&M costs that are incidental to some of our capital projects, costs that may or may not be appropriate to capitalize, and so they're charged to O&M. That occasionally happens.
Okay, so I'm looking at just the blank lines. You're saying that there's a possibility those will be filled in at some point?
It's unlikely, really. The bulk of that O&M in there is, again, incidental costs for some of our CIP projects, be it, I don't know if we needed a supply for a capital project, but it wasn't appropriate to capitalize it. It wasn't a large expenditure. We wouldn't include it as part of a capital project. It would just be expensed as O&M. So we occasionally see that. It's very minimal, so we did not factor in anything in the forecast for that, but that's definitely, it's manageable.
Okay, and the same thing under sources for state grants. It's because we have not applied yet, but is there, again, a possibility that these could be added on?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, yes. If we have opportunities for grants, we are always exploring them and we'll pursue them. The grant revenues that you see there in next year is tied to our MUP projects.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Gomez, are there any ARPA funds that are part of the five-year forecast in terms of revenue sources?
Mr. Mayor, no. Those are living in the restricted portion that's remaining to be spent is now living in our grants fund. And any of those costs, including, you know, we mentioned with the tentative budget item, the westward look improvements that will be redirected towards the grant fund. But those restricted revenues that are remaining are all in the grants fund now. So that's where that activity will be taking place.
Thank you. In the staff write-up, it mentions that the forecast assumes operation and maintenance costs increase 2% per year. We've been in this high inflationary period, and we're still, I mean, it's coming down, but we're not anywhere near 2%. Can you just speak to how that 2% was determined as far as the five-year forecast?
Right, sure, Mr. Mayor. So first of all, let me just clarify that we assume essentially that the high costs we're seeing right now continue because we did not peel back any of our O&M at all. The 2%'s generally been the national goal in terms of inflation. 2%'s been kind of the standard national goal, and so that's generally been assumed in our forecast. We didn't want to make any assumptions that inflation might come down because that's a little too, it just remains to be seen. I think the more prudent and conservative forecast would be to just continue assuming some of those high costs with a 2% included as an increase each fiscal year.
Okay. Thank you. And then in the Community Center Fund sources forecast, in FY 2022-23, I mean, just doing some of my own math, I believe it's showing a negative $425,000. But I believe in staff reports, and maybe I'm interpreting this incorrectly, that we're, for this fiscal year, we're more at the break even than almost nearly a $500,000 deficit. And again, I've kind of crunched some of my own numbers here, so it's not in your chart, so I can't point to.
Mr. Mayor, are you referring to the Community Center Fund?
Community Center Fund forecast, so the FY22. So I've just taken I think what I was looking at, revenue. So the revenue, the total is $9,698,000. But what I was looking at was personnel and O&M and excluded the other. Mm-hmm. So I looked at personnel and O&M for uses, and then I looked at the sources, taxes, and charge for services. Or maybe it was just charge for services. That's probably...
Yes, the charges for services, obviously the bulk of that's our contracted revenues. But yeah, if you were to compare that, the 5.8 versus, about 6.4 when you add up personnel and O&M.
Right. But in our, in the most recent financial report, it was forecasting that it would be break even basically. So, I mean, it would take into consideration the sales tax, the contributions from the HOA, that would certainly bring it closer to break even, but not quite at break even. Am I interpreting that correctly or incorrectly?
Yeah, I believe so. I can take another look at that and come back to you with more of those details if you'd like. But yeah, that should tie those year-end estimates for fiscal year 22-23 should tie to the tentative budget.
Okay. And then just looking at that, again, doing those numbers in terms of looking at, and I think I omitted taxes, just charges of services, and then revenue being generated, we show, or I'm showing you know, that were negative in 23-24, negative in 24-25, negative in 25-26, negative and then positive in the out years, 27-28, 28-29. Is that aligning correctly?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Other questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Regarding Community Center Fund charges for services, for example, for this fiscal year, we think we're going to have $5.785 million. But as we go out 3-4 years, we predict an extra $1.5 million in revenues. Can you describe for us how you forecast revenues that much higher a few years out from now?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. So the bulk of that, again, is going to be the contracted golf revenues. I believe they have about a 3% growth forecasted for those outer years. Staff does not prepare those forecasts. We rely on our contractor to prepare that. But, you know, coming out of the irrigation project and having that complete, they've got some healthy growth factored in there. For our own town revenues, we did about a 1% increase for our fitness revenues and for our member dues.
So did I hear correctly that the charges for services, those forecasts are done by the contractor, not by the town?
That's correct.
And do they provide any supporting rationale for it? For example, for me, I could see revenues going up because there's more rounds of golf. There's more gym memberships. We increase the price of gym memberships. We increase the price of rounds of golf. Or we start charging for things that we don't charge for right now. I'm just trying to dig in a little deeper. $1.5 million is a lot of additional revenue. So do we have any supporting rationale for why we think the revenue would go up that much?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, they provide a detailed report to us for their forecast. It's not, you know, here's the numbers. It's a report.
Is that available tonight for us to dig into a little bit?
I don't have that as part of the materials tonight. We could, if that's council's purview, we could look into that if desired.
Thank you. And something I noticed as I go back and I look at last year and this year, now we've added interest income to our community center sources, which seems reasonable because it appears in the monthly financials. We just didn't happen to have it there in the same, you know, five-year forecast a year ago. Wanted to get a little bit of insight into, you know, how do we forecast what our interest income is? Because I see forecasts that starts with $35,000 but can go up to as high as, you know, almost $200,000. Why do we think we're going to earn so much more interest income in the out years than we are right now?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. So the large factor of that increase there is the rise in fund balance that you see there in those outer years. So when we're allocating our interest income earnings to funds, it does depend on the cash in each fund. And so if a fund is performing well or if it's adding to its fund balance, you are inherently going to see more interest income post in that fund.
But what we're showing is 5 to 6 times as high in terms of our income, but the fund balances aren't 5 to 6 times greater, are they?
The fund balance is growing from $1.3 million at the end of 26-27 to $2.2 in 27-28 and then $4.8 in 28-29.
So it less than doubles to 27-28, yet our interest income goes up by almost 6 times. To me, that implies it's completely possible, but that implies a much better predicted investment return or interest rates. Can, you know, we find out kind of how do we make these forecasts? Because that's a very difficult forecast to make out in
it
the future.
Is.
I hope you will agree, right?
It is.
What are we going to make on our investments? We wouldn't be here right now if we could, you know, say I'm going to make this much money in 5 years. So
right.
Can you kind of help us how these numbers are arrived at?
Right, yeah. So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, so we did actually leave that flat in the last fiscal year. That could grow with the growth in fund balance. But, again, to Councilmember Bowen's point, this revenue source is very difficult to predict. It can have wide swings. And so, you know, even if we see an increase, a rise in fund balance, just that alone would have a positive impact. But because of the volatility in these sources, we just want to probably stay conservative and don't want to assume any large rises, better to play it safe with that source.
And we call this interest income, but is it really interest on a bond or a bank account, or is this a portfolio of investments that we more or less kind of mark to market at the end of the year to determine what our interest income is going to be? That's been a little bit confusing to me. Maybe we could, you know, help enlighten us on that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. So in terms of our budget, we really rely on the actual interest income, the dividends that we collect. That's kind of what we budget based on. The mark-to-market adjustments that's required at the end of the year is a separate auditor adjusting entry that's required in the ACFR. And so essentially what we're budgeting for is the actual earned recognized interest income, the realized interest income. The portion that it reflects the required mark-to-market value at the end of the year, you know, we've seen huge positives from that, but we also saw a decline last fiscal year. And so we do not include that in our budget numbers. There's too much of a fluctuation in that. What we're really relying on for the budget and for the forecast is the actual earned revenues.
And then regarding the miscellaneous item, it seems like it really kind of negatively drops off a cliff in fiscal year 25-26. But it seems like we know it's going to drop off a cliff. Can you describe why it goes down so much?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's the HOA contributions. So after year five of those contracts, they will end. And so those revenues are removed from the forecast.
So as the mayor was getting at, our actual, you know, black or red on golf will be impacted by not having those, by the amount that we don't get. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Other questions from council? Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. Can you go to the slide where you talk about the capital outlay being lean? I think it had the personnel cost. Sorry, I don't have the title, but I think it had the personnel costs and the capital outlay. Yeah, near the beginning.
This one?
Okay. No. So it's one of the first ones, and this was part of my question. You show in that fund, in the first one, $500,000 yearly capital outlay, but then we have transfers to the capital fund of $4 million. So I just wanted to make sure I understood. Let's see. It's even earlier than this one.
If you could tell me, Vice Mayor, which fund? Oh, okay. Highway fund. Okay.
Oh, wait. Was it this one? No. No. The very first slide that's like this. Maybe it's the general fund. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yes. The capital outlay in the general fund. Yes.
Yes.
I know.
So here we talk about our capital outlay being only $500,000 roughly in year 24, 25, and 25, 26 and on. But then we're transferring $4 million from the general fund to the capital fund. So how does that sort of play together? Can you help me understand that a little bit better, these two funds and how that represents our capital outlays?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett. What's in the general fund as capital is our non-CIP, our operating capital. So items under $50,000, that would be computers, that would be small pieces of equipment that the Parks Department needs. It'd be, you know, pieces of equipment that maybe the Police Department needs and that kind of thing. IT does take up a pretty good chunk of this with mobile data computer replacements and computer replacements. So that's what's in here. The transfers to the capital fund are actually strictly CIP projects.
Okay, thank you. That is helpful. So this $500,000 is just representing other things that are outside of our primary capital costs, which are represented in the capital fund.
That's correct. And it could include you know, non-CIP operating capital needs for like our facility maintenance stuff as well, if there were small building improvements that needed to be made that fell under that $50,000 threshold.
Okay, thank you. So what's causing in the 23-24 the much higher capital outlay cost? Is that the IT portion of this year's budget?
Yes, we do have a considerable IT budget for capital in that fiscal year. We also have the PD digital forensic CIP project in the general fund for that fiscal year. And then there's also some one-time needs for parks and recreation that are included. And so that's why I mentioned that the forecast for those future years is quite lean, because there could be some additional one-time items that come up that departments may end up requesting as part of the budget process. Now, again, those are one-time. They're designated one-time. But yes, you know, the forecast for non-operating capital in the general fund is a little lean in the outer years, and I just wanted to mention that.
Okay, thank you. I think it'll be okay, because I think that the budget is pretty, this five-year forecast is quite conservative, particularly in terms of revenues. So while it's a lean projection on that, those capital outlay years, my suspicion is that we'll see what we've seen in the past, and there will be opportunity to be able to increase that if needed, and if that funding becomes available. Regarding the increasing personnel costs, I know you mentioned that steps and merits are included, and then also additional personnel. About how much of that cost is due to steps and merits, and about how much is due to additional personnel? Is there sort of a 50-50 breakdown in terms of where the increase comes from, or rough guide?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, I believe we included about $300,000 or so for new personnel, and so it's more so going to be the pay increases and the step increases for the police department, and then benefit increases as well would be factored in there. So more of it's due to the pay and step adjustments and benefits versus capacity for new personnel.
Okay, but the capacity for new personnel builds on itself, right? Because there's new personnel in each year.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I just wanted to clarify and make sure I understood that. Thank you, Ms. Gomez.
Any other questions? Ms. Gomez, thank you for your presentation this evening. Of course, all the work that it represents. Mr. Hutchinson. Hutchinson. Thank you. Mr. Gephardt, we appreciate your efforts as well. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll go to the consent agenda. And Councilmember Bowen has asked that item C and item E be pulled. I move to approve items A, B, and D of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any discussion?
May I discuss any tiny issue?
Okay.
On item
okay.
B?
Councilmember Green, item B.
Appointment to the public safety personnel retirement system is Kathleen Hernandez, and she is a true star. She's involved in almost every volunteer activity of the police force, and I think we could not have gotten a better representative. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Green. Any other discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Consent agenda item C, Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I asked to pull this item, which is on the updated PSPRS policy, to ask a few questions regarding investment rate returns and historical averages. The question I have is, there's a statement in the just revised fiscal year 23-24 funding policy where we state regarding the PSPRS returns, this is due to historically poor investment performance in the plan and should assist in mitigating what risk should it continue. Basically, it's a statement that says we need to continue making contributions to the plan because there is a risk that we won't see the type of investment returns that we need to in order to keep us close to the 110% funded ratio. And I just had a question for the finance department, and that is, you know, what is the average annual investment return of the Arizona PSPRS plan?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, thank you for the question. So as far back as I could go, I can go back about 14 years to data that's available online in the PSPRS plan, and over that 14-year period, the average return or the average yield for the plan is 6.38%.
Is that their reported number or your calculation?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's looking at the yields of the plan as reported by the plan and dividing by 14. So at summing every single year, the yield, the percent return, and dividing by the number of years represented.
Well, in my review of the website for the PSPRS today, their advertised number is 7.3%. It's 1% different, but it is significant. You know, 7's a lot bigger than 6. It's about 16% bigger. And what I will follow up with the question, we invest our own liquid funds internally. We have that interest income category in all of our monthly fund statements. What type of historical return do we, the town, get when we invest our own money?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, the town, depending on the rate environment that we're in, will typically yield between 1 and 3%. We're just coming out of a low yield environment, so the last several years it's been closer to 1. We are now in a higher yielding environment, so it is definitely on the uptick, closer to 3.
So PSPRS is advertising on their own website 7.3, and our own numbers regarding our own investment performance are closer to 1 to 3%. Are they doing a few percentage points better than we are?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, this is not an apples-to-apples comparison. The plan can invest in various types of assets and diversify in ways that the town is not allowed to due to Arizona Revised Statute.
With respect to, could you describe for us what specific investments PSPRS can use that we can't?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, PSPRS can invest in equity investments, which the town is not allowed to.
Okay, well, the point I just wanted to make before we vote on this is that I asked what it was, and I believe it's 7.3%, and I asked the staff as well, could you give us an example of something, a benchmark we should shoot for, and they provided the ARS, which gives us 8.3%. And why I think this is important to mention, we just put $27 million in the PSPRS, and the public should know that this is not a poorly performing investment fund. They advertise their fiscal year 2021 return was 21%. We all know that was a good return, but these aren't people that just lose your money. They have made money consistently, and whatever they advertise each year, really, it's actually a 7-year average. Because as Mr. Gephardt mentioned correctly, yes, not all investors can invest in any kind of investment. When you have a pension fund, you can't lose money. You can't go broke. You'll get a run on your pension fund bank. So this rate of return, I personally take exception to. And I went back and I looked. Every report we say PSPRS gives a poor rate of return. But we had no supporting data. And it's actually 7.3%. It's not terrible. And for that reason, that's why we are at an excess of 100% funded right now. Not only do we give them our money, but they help us make money. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Nicholson, did you have?
I mean, I think me and Mo were thinking the same thing, but the 14 years and dividing, or the 89% divided by 14 to get 6.3%, that's not quite correct because the interest, it's compounding every year. So that should be slightly lower than that. I don't know what the exact number is, but.
Okay, thank you. Vice Mayor Barrett?
I think that we knew that the PSPRS was projecting a higher rate of return than they were actually receiving when we funded the PSPRS pension. And that's one of the main reasons that we made that decision to move forward with that, because we felt that if we continued with just the path that they were projecting, that those prices were going to increase and increase and increase to the point that they would take up so much of the town budget for future 5-year fiscal forecasts like we just saw, that it would handicap our ability to do other things. So we were trying to head that off at the pass and make sure that that was funded so we can see what we see now, which is a decrease in those payments in our 5-year forecast instead of a continuing increase to the point that it would really harm the town. So, I mean, I think a lot of those things that Councilmember Bowen and Mr. Gephardt were discussing, that all went into play, you know, when we made this decision to fund this police pension. So,
I move to approve,
Mr. Mayor,
Councilmember Nichols or Councilmember Solomon.
Yeah. Since we're on this topic, we always seem to forget we made a $10,000 cash contribution.
$10 million.
Well, there's a certain thing called current value versus future value. And with inflation being the way it is, we may have lost money on that $10 million because of inflation. The value of $10 million today is a lot less than it was 2 years ago. So when we're talking about the pros and cons of the 110% financing, we also have to remember there's a bigger picture to this, which seems to be left out sometimes. I'm not saying it was a good choice or a bad choice, but I'm saying we have to accurately account for all the expenses, including our interest payments for the bond or the loan we took out on that. But we never seem to discuss the $10 million payment regarding current and future value. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to make a motion to approve item C of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any discussion? Councilmember Bowen?
Yes, I agree. We did give them $10 million. But it wasn't an expense. It's an
investment.
Point
of order. Wasn't the motion already approved? Aren't we on to the next item?
Well, there was a discussion. I didn't see Councilmember Bowen raise his hand. So.
And it was up like this.
Okay. So I've acknowledged it. So you have the floor.
Thank you. This is very important to our town, because when we spend a lot of money, you might wonder, is this an expense or is it an investment? When we give them $10 million, that goes against our unfunded liability. It's not an expense. It's actually a reallocation. We took $10 million out of our reserves, and we paid down a debt that we were currently holding with the PSPRS, which at one time was $24 million. Now we're in a positive position. That's been a remarkable turnaround, and it's just, in my view, just my personal view, it's just a reallocation of funds. It's not an expense. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
So the motion on the floor is to approve item C of the consent agenda, and it has been seconded by the Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Councilmember Bowen, item E of the consent agenda.
Is it item E?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This regards the IGA that we are going to establish with ADOT for a multi-use path on the north side of Naranja Park. I think it's fantastic that this made it into the agenda, but I do have a question. It says in the agenda write-up that the project coordinator would be assigned as of May 29th, which is basically the date that this agenda went out. Do we have a project coordinator assigned, or is that coming up in the future?
Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, it's going to be the end of June right now. But we've been in communication with ADOT. The project kickoff of the design is still scheduled for the end of July. So ADOT understands, and we've been working through the IGA. The IGA is about 3 weeks later getting to you than was originally planned. That's how the timetable has unraveled. But ADOT's made the commitment to get everything whole by the end of July.
And thank you, Mr. Kiesel. So in your view, this doesn't impact the long-term completion of the project. It's a delay at the beginning that's absorbed by the entire schedule.
Yes, that's correct, Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I move to approve item E of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. I think we'll take a 5-minute break before moving on to the regular agenda. All right, we'll resume the regular session. Mr. Standish, item one.
Public hearing, resolution number R23-23, authorizing and approving an increase to the potable water base rates, increase to the potable water commodity rates, and an increase to the reclaimed water commodity rate for the Town of Oro Valley Water Utility.
Thank you. Our Water Utility Director, Mr. Abraham, will present this item. Mr. Abraham, welcome.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Hello, members of council, colleagues. My name is Peter Abraham, and I'm the director of our town's water utility. And with me today is our utility's water administrator, Mary Rallis, and our water operations manager, David Allred. So thank you for being here. So the water utility is an enterprise fund of the town of Oro Valley. It's funded solely from water sales, fees, and charges. All revenues are used for the operating costs of the utility. And the utility as an enterprise fund is not dependent on the town's general fund. But the utility does pay administrative service fees to the general fund for services that we can't provide ourselves internally. For example, human resources, legal, procurement, those kinds of services. The water rates analysis, it's a process, and we have goals and assumptions. The process is every year the water utility staff prepares a water rate analysis report. It's reviewed by and discussed with the Water Utility Commission. As you know, the Water Utility Commission is a citizens advisory body to council, and we work closely with them to develop the rate structure that we need for the next fiscal year. The commission and utility staff make a recommendation to council on the proposed water rates, and that's what we're here to do tonight. The goals of our water rate analysis is to meet revenue and the cash reserve and debt service coverage requirements, recover the cost of service, as well as promote water conservation and maintain the financial health of the utility. We have to make some assumptions every year when we're performing our water rate analysis. Some of those assumptions are water resource costs, growth, inflation, interest rates, and personnel requirements. We also, this year, we have a planned use of cash for existing system improvements. The proposed potable water rates recommendation, we're proposing to increase the potable base rate, increases to the potable commodity rate for all of our tiers, 1, 2, 3, and 4, with no other changes to the potable water rates. This year, as last year, we're making changes to both the base rate and the commodity rate. One of the reasons why we, I think almost every year, have made changes to the base rate is to provide revenue stability for the utility. For example, we had such a marvelous hydrology this year. We had a very wet fall, winter, and spring, and our commodity, the consumption, was down. It was lower than what we had projected. But thankfully, thanks to this council and previous council's support of the utility in raising base rates, we were able to still meet, you know, the requirements we needed to operate the utility because we had a healthy base rate. Our revenues were still lower than what we had projected, but not as low as they would have been had we not had a healthy base rate. So again, we're proposing a modest base rate increase as well as commodity rate increase. So why do we need a potable water rate increase? Well, our costs are going up. We need to offset our Central Arizona Project water delivery and wheeling costs. A portion of our CAP water is wheeled through Tucson Water's capital infrastructure to get to our service area. We're seeing about a 5% increase in that for next year as well as the subsequent 3 or 4 years. And also because of the Central Arizona Project's Tier 2A shortage, we're seeing a 12% increase in our delivery charge.
And here again, that's because CAP is delivering less water to fewer customers. A lot of their fixed costs remain the same. So the cost per unit to their customers, for example, Oro Valley, that cost per unit is going up. So between, the CAP delivery charge, increasing wheeling costs, and a third item is our capital costs have gone up. The water utility is seeing the effects of inflationary costs due to construction materials. I think to get at the same amount of work that we were able to do just last year, it's costing us 30 to 40% more to do the same work. So we're seeing increases in what it takes to maintain our capital infrastructure. So what does our proposed potable water base and commodity rate look like? Of 87% of our customers have the smallest meter size that we offer. That's a 5/8 inch meter. They would see a $1.20 per month increase in their base rate. So their base rate for a 5/8 inch customer would go from what it is right now, $19.94 a month, to $21.14 per month. And as you go up in meter size, the cost or the base rate goes up, but the percentage stays very close to being the same. And the reason why, you may ask, why is it that the base rate goes up for the meter size, is we look at what is the potential demand to a system. If you leave your 5/8 inch meter running all night long, you leave the hose on, our system doesn't even see it. There's very little impact to the system. If you had a 4-inch meter and you left a 4-inch valve wide open all night, we would have booster pumps running all night long. So we would see that. It's a big impact to the system. So, commercial customers that typically have the larger meter sizes, they pay a higher base rate just because of the potential impact they have on the system. We don't have the option of not meeting their demand needs. We have to. The proposed potable water commodity rate increases for Tier 1, which most of our customers are in a Tier 1, we're looking at an increase of 13 cents per 1,000 gallons. So currently it's $2.52 per 1,000 gallons, and we're looking at increasing that to $2.65 per 1,000 gallons. One of the things we did this year, a significant change with respect to the commodity rate increase, is we're really increasing the percentage rate increase between the different tiers. Most of our customers are in a Tier 1, and for residential customers, we want to have a conservation incentive. So if you look at Tier 1, that's a 5% increase. Tier 2, that's a 10% increase. Tier 3 is a 20% increase, and Tier 4 is a 25% increase. So really starting to, incentivize people to not be in those higher tiers, Tiers 3 and 4 especially. You look at Tier 4, we're increasing it $1.76 per 1,000 gallons. But, we don't have a lot of customers there. We don't generate a lot of revenue there, but we just really want to encourage people to stay out of those high use tiers. While the water utility, we do this water rate analysis every year, and it's based on what it costs for us to run our system and our unique environment. We do look at what other neighboring water service providers charge for water, and it's just benchmarking, making sure we're in the hunt. And for, I think, almost a decade now, Oro Valley is we offer the lowest cost for water when we compare us to Metro Water, Murano Water, and Tucson Water. Like I said, 87% of our customers are going to be in that just under $46 a month range for the water portion of their bill. If you compare that to Metro Water, their customer using looking at their base rate, their commodity rate, their customer that uses 7,000 gallons a month, they're going to pay $47.75. Marana's customer will pay $53.89, and Tucson Water's customer will pay $52.56. You know, another reason, getting back to the tiers, how we really start to increase the percentage increase for the commodity rate is we started looking at, we did kind of look at what other neighboring water service providers were doing. And, you know, you look at Marana and Tucson Water, I mean, the commodity rate you pay for their higher tiers is really high. And I felt we weren't incentivizing folks enough to stay in that lower tiers one and two. So, but we're still across the board for every tier. We're the lowest cost water service provider in Southern Arizona. In addition to a potable water rate increase, we're also in need of a reclaimed water rate increase. Our reclaimed water, it's not an allocation, it's an entitlement. It's based on how much potable water we deliver to our customers. But nonetheless, to get that water to our service area, we pay the City of Tucson Water Department to bring that water to our service area by utilizing their capital infrastructure. And we're seeing an increase in that. For roughly 1,700 acre feet of reclaimed water, it's costing us just under an extra $40,000 a year. The rate increase we're asking is literally just to cover that increase in cost that we're seeing. So what does that look like? We're looking at 10 cents per 1,000 gallons. Our largest reclaimed water users are our turf customers. So if you look at, what would a golf course, our typical 18-hole golf course uses 10 million gallons of water a month, and they would see an increase in their monthly water bill of $1,000 a month, or approximately 3.6%. So right now, our current commodity rate for reclaimed water is $2.25 per 1,000 gallons, and we're looking to increase that to $2.35 per 1,000 gallons. Here again, just kind of benchmarking ourselves and looking at neighboring water service providers that provide reclaimed water to their customers similarly to us. The one that's most similar to us is Tucson Water. And for 10 million gallons, they would charge their customer a little over $30,000, and we're just under $29,000. So the Water Utility Commission and your water utility staff, we respectfully recommend approval of a water rate increase to the potable base rates, the potable water commodity rates, and the reclaimed commodity rate. If the proposed rates are approved, they will become effective July 8th, and they will be reflected on the water bills beginning in August of the new fiscal year. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abraham. We do have a public hearing associated with this agenda item. I'm going to open the public hearing at this time. This is the opportunity for members of the public to speak to this particular agenda item. You do that by obtaining a blue card in the back of the room and giving that to one of the clerks. I currently do not have any blue cards. I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'd like to make a motion. I move to approve resolution number R23-23, authorizing and approving an increase to the potable water base rates, an increase to the potable water commodity rates, and an increase to the reclaimed water commodity rate.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. The item is open for discussion.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Solomon.
A quick question, Peter, on the comparison to the Tucson Water cost. I just heard today on the news that they increased the fee, and it was an average increase of, like, I think $2.40 per customer. Do you happen to know if this $52.56 Tucson Water includes their increase they just made or not?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, it does not. When we do this body of work, we actually start this in September, and because of the notification process that we have to do, and you know, in getting this information out to the public. We finish this body of work. We're done with it in, you know, January. We take it to our commission in February. So this was the old, their old rates.
All right. So we're, I mean, once again, Oro Valley is, it's commendable. We're about the lowest, we are the lowest rate in the area. And I think we probably have better water. Well, I know we have better water and great service. So I think it's still an incredible value to the Oro Valley Water Utility customers. I just don't see any way around that. And I think it's been very impressive how you and your staff have continually worked to keep the cost down, to minimize the increases. And in addition to a lot of forward thinking, looking ahead to make sure that we're prepared and we don't have caught by surprise by a large increase. So I just want to say, you know, publicly, I think it's the Water Utility's doing a fantastic job. Our rates are the lowest, and we do have, I believe, the best quality water. So thanks to you and your staff.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon. And again, I'd like to express our success is only because of the support of this community and this council. That's why we're successful, and that's why we're able to provide the level of service we do at the cost that we do it for. So thank you.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Hi, Mr. Abraham. So I'm trying not use people's first name. I'm really bad about that. How much higher would the water rates be without ARPA funding?
You know, because we, it wouldn't have, I don't think it would have changed anything this fiscal year just because our cash reserve is healthy and we're like, you know, where we plan on being, I think roughly is it a $1.5 million less in our cash reserve, Mary, next year than we are right now. So we just would have burned down that cash reserve a little faster. But, I mean, does it have an effect? Absolutely. Do we know, Mary, what roughly what it, we wouldn't really see the benefit. Yes, it's a benefit to us for sure. We really wouldn't realize the benefit for maybe years two or three. It's maintained our healthy cash reserve balance longer. Qualitatively speaking, if I project out over a 5-year period, the ARPA funds probably reduced. Well, I do know it. I think we were at like 6.8% increase, I think, weren't we? Yeah. You know what? There, to maintain the, all things being equal, to maintain the same cash reserves that we have now, the same, I think we're under 5% now, and I think we were just under 6.5%. So I want to say ARPA funds probably saved us, all things being equal, this year, probably 50 cents per customer with a 5/8 inch meter.
Another question I had, we had the commodity rates for the, I think it was 5/8 meter. Do we have the commodity rates for the other meter sizes? The bottom.
Yes.
Right,
so if you look at well, it's, so this is the, I'm showing, what I'm showing you right here is the tiers for a 5/8 inch meter. The larger the meter size, for example, on a 4-inch meter, you don't get from 0 to 7,000 gallons. I can look through the rate report and tell you, but let's just say you get from like 0 to 40,000 gallons. The larger the meter size, each tier covers a larger range. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah.
So, I mean,
here I can.
Are they proportional, though? Like the flow rate of a 5/8 inch meter at 7,000, is that going to be compared to like a 3-inch yeah. meter, the amount of flow that those would equally have at the same pressure for, you know, the base rates are.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, let me see if I can back into answering your question. So for example, a 5/8 inch meter, tier one goes from 0 to 7,000 gallons, whereas a 4-inch meter in a tier one goes from 0 to 175,000 gallons. Now, bear in mind, the base rate for a 5/8 inch meter is proposed to be $21.14, whereas the base rate for that 4-inch meter is $528.19. And what we do is we follow The commodity rate stays the same for all tiers.
Oh, so okay, so it doesn't matter.
Councilmember Nicholson, can you please use your?
I'm sorry about that. So the tiers for the amount of gallon usage is the same price per thousands of gallons going down to different meter sizes, correct?
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Nicholson, yes, but the range you get is more for each tier, the larger the meter is.
Okay, right. But the price for that, so
a tier,
yeah, like the first tier is going to be 40,000 versus 7,000, but that 40,000, is that 40,000 going to be like $7 or $8? Is it going to be $2 for the same 40,000 gallons? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, the tier rate for all meter sizes is the same. So, for example, whether you have a 5/8 inch meter or a 4-inch meter, if you're in tier one, you're going to be paying $2.65 per 1,000 gallons.
Okay. And then with that in mind, when we're talking about the gallons, that gallons is relative to the size of the meter. It's proportional.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, that's correct.
Great, thanks.
Other questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Peter, Mr. Abraham, could we go to the reclaimed water slide, please? I noticed that Metro and Marana are listed as NA. Is it because they don't have any reclaimed water, or why is an NA there?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, so Metro Water does not deliver reclaimed water to their customers at this time. And Marana Water, they have their own wastewater treatment plant that serves just a small portion of their community. So it's really hard to, they're not really comparable. They're not the only one that's in the southern Arizona that's similar to us. And it's very important that they operate similarly is Tucson Water.
And, no, thank you. That explains it. And there's another statement that you frequently make, and that is when the town has good hydrology, which me as an amateur would say we got a lot of rain that year, we use less water. But, you know, can you help explain to us exactly how you think that works? Because I could just say, for example, when it rains a lot, well, I don't have to irrigate my lawn, but I don't see a lot of lawns in Oral Valley, and I don't have to fill up my swimming pool or what have you. Do we know how that works? Why do we see lower usage when it rains a lot?
Great question. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, there is an absolutely direct correlation between temperature, rain, and water consumption. And, you know, what it is, and I'm going to speak anecdotally just on my behaviors when it rains. When my behaviors when it rains is I manually, you know, maybe in the wintertime or the fall, winter, spring, I might give the landscaping a little kiss of water once a week. I think I shut my irrigation off in October, and I didn't turn it on again literally till April. So the outdoor watering is tremendously less. You know, I think our indoor consumption probably stays about the same, but the outdoor consumption just goes down. And maybe there are behavioral patterns where people, you know, it's wet and cold. I didn't get sweaty today. I don't need a shower. I don't know. But there certainly is a correlation between temperature and water consumption. Absolutely.
And then I would be remiss if I didn't show my appreciation. This is a group of people I see every month. You guys see me every month, Mr. Aldred, Ms. Rowles, and Mr. Abraham. I'm just wondering, because you guys do have a really good back end. You've shown us many times you've got the ability to do a lot of analysis on water usage. So do you know anything beyond anecdotally? What you say makes sense. If everybody has a drip irrigation system and it's raining a lot and they turn it off, well, that will drop it. But do we have any ability to really go and look, because, you know, water is super important for us right now. Any understanding we can get, to me as a resident, would seem to serve us well.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, as you being the council liaison to the Water Utility Commission, in August, you're going to hear a presentation by Karn Boyce, our water conservation specialist. She does a lot of work with our Water Smart program. And we've worked with a consultant this last year to develop a tool to help us manage all of the water consumption data we have. We have a tremendous amount of data, and now managing it has become quite challenging. We worked with a consultant that worked with our IT to mine the data that comes out of our AMI system, and we're getting some. We're able to not just qualitatively, or not just qualitative, but quantitatively answer those questions. I don't want to give a spoiler alert, but in August we're going to give you some of the answers to those questions.
And thank you. I look forward to that. And final question. You know, what percentage of our revenues are lost by unpaid bills? I assume it's pretty small, but it would be kind of nice to know that.
In fact, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I know you must have the finger on the pulse of the water utility. I think Mary just was telling me that yesterday. It's less than 1%. It's our write-off percentage is very low.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments? There's a motion. Mr. Abraham, thank you to you and your staff. I know you offer the least expensive water provider, but that doesn't translate into we have high integrity in terms of our system and the maintenance of the system. So certainly applaud you and your entire department.
On behalf of the staff and this senior management team, thank you for your continued support. You've been nothing but supportive of our mission, and that's why we're successful. So we're going to do our best to keep your trust, to keep this community's trust. But thank you for your support, because we wouldn't be successful without it. So thank you.
Thank you. So the motion on the floor is to approve. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Mr. Standish, we'll go to item 2 of the regular agenda.
Public hearing, resolution number R23-24, discussion of possible action regarding the adoption of the tentative budget for fiscal year 2023-24 and setting the local alternative expenditure limitation for fiscal year 2023-24.
So this item will be introduced tonight by our interim town manager, Mr. Cornelison. The presentation will be by Mr. Gephardt, our chief financial officer. Mr. Cornelison.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And just real briefly, I appreciate the opportunity tonight to have our tentative budget proposed to you this evening, as well as the expenditure limitation being proposed for 23-24. Overall, there were not significant changes comparatively to the recommended budget. However, we did list all changes within the agenda item, and so hopefully Town Council found that useful and helpful in terms of the discussion of what Mr. Gephardt is about to present. The next meeting on June 21st, should this item get approved, would be the final budget adoption for your consideration. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Gephardt. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cornelison. Mr. Gephardt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. If we can bring up the presentation this evening. So I'll dive right in. So good evening. Tonight I'm pleased to be presenting the tentative budget for fiscal year 23-24 and have a short presentation for you. The tentative budget before you this evening totals about $148.5 million, which is one half of 1%. One half of 1%, or about $600,000 greater than the town manager's recommended budget. It is also about $785,000 greater than the current adopted budget. This is the first year the town is subject to the permanent base adjustment passed by voters in November 2020. The Economic Estimates Commission has calculated the maximum spending authority for the town next fiscal year. The proposed tentative budget is well under that amount, even without considering exclusions. So we're well within our range there of our maximum that we would be allowed to spend according to the Economic Estimates Commission and our permanent base assessment. A significant portion of the tentative budget reflects CIP projects already approved by the council and are in process, which we'll see on the following slide. This is why planned use of fund balance is the largest source at $44.5 million, or about 30% of the total of $148.5 million. Of this amount, about 25%, or a little over $11 million, is housed in contingency. The balance is primarily dedicated toward capital items in either the capital fund or the water impact fee fund. Sales taxes and state shared revenues combined comprise about 38% of the budgeted sources at $57.4 million. Miscellaneous is primarily comprised of self-insurance billings for our medical self-insurance fund, which is about $4.3 million, investment income of about $880,000, vehicle reserves of $892,000, and unforeseen grant capacity of about $547,000. Outside funding sources is primarily comprised of federal and state grants and RTA reimbursements, which are about $1.77 million. This slide shows where those resources are being directed by category. 97% of capital is related to CIP, which is shown on the following slide. This is a heavy capital year as the town spends down its remaining bond proceeds and ARPA monies. Capital accounts for a third of the total tentative budget. Not surprisingly, personnel is the next highest percentage of spending in the tentative budget, followed by O&M. As mentioned previously, contingency is budgeted at a healthy 7.5% or $11.1 million, and debt service is at a very manageable 5.4% or about $8 million. Looking at CIP by category, again, it comprises about 97% of capital spending on the prior slide. CIP for Naranja Park amenities, as well as the community center elevator and completing irrigation improvements to the Kenyatta course, are primary factors why Parks and Recreation comprises the largest portion of spending at 45%. Water system improvements are next on the list, with NERDS projects being a driving force here, and then street and road improvements are at 11%. Turning to the general fund, here's a side-by-side comparison or summary of revenues and expenditures in the tentative budget. We are projecting revenues to land at about $57.5 million, with corresponding expenditures at $50.4 million, which excludes $5 million in contingency, which, if you'll recall, we have $5 million budgeted contingency this year, so we're keeping that contingency for next year as well in the tentative budget. In summary, the tentative budget adoption sets the maximum spending ceiling at $148.5 million, which is slightly higher than the town manager's recommended budget. A reconciliation of the changes, as interim town manager Cornelison has alluded to, has been included in your council memorandum for this item. Once approved, expenditures may only be reduced or reallocated but cannot be increased. We will publish the tentative budget for 2 consecutive weeks, in accordance with Arizona local budget law, and final budget adoption is scheduled for June 21st in 2 weeks. With that, I'd like to thank our entire team of managers and directors for their hard work this budget season. We are at your pleasure to address any additional questions you may have. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council.
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. I'm going to open the public hearing for this agenda item. This is the public's opportunity to speak to this particular topic. I do not have any blue cards. I'm going to close the public hearing. I move to approve resolution number R23-24, adopting the tentative budget for fiscal year 2023-24 and setting the local alternative expenditure limitation for fiscal year 2023-24 at $148,489,391.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. We'll open it to council discussion. Questions, discussion? Councilmember Bowen?
Dave, could we go back to the slide that shows contingency as an expense? It's a horizontal bar chart. Contingency reserves. Are contingency reserves, as of July 1st, are they allocated towards any particular expenditure?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, no, they are not. They are not allocated to any specific expenditure or project.
And in recent years, have we been spending a lot of contingency?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, no. The simple answer is we are not. We do not have a history of spending significant amounts of contingency or reallocating that contingency into spendable line items.
Would it be true then if we have a good year where we've done a good forecast, as of course we do, and things go reasonably well, the contingency can turn what we predict at the beginning of the year as a budget deficit into a surplus. The unspent contingency can take you from the red into the black.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I suppose that is correct. If you factor contingency into your total expenditures, it can make it look like you are budgeting a deficit, but if that's not spent, then that can actually turn into a surplus. That is correct.
Well, I'm wondering if we really are budgeting a deficit, because in the three budgets that I've had the pleasure to participate, there's been a significant contingency. It looks like we're going to run a significant deficit during the year. We don't have major unplanned expenses, and we can just see that deficit rolling into either a smaller deficit or into a surplus. And I was trying to understand, like, what happens every year? And I think one of the things that actually happens is no mystery at all, is that we're very conservative in terms of our expenditures because we put an amount as large as $11.1 million in it. And this is kind of like, you know, on defense, this is your free safety, right? Maybe they don't they're there to tackle somebody at the very end, but the ball carrier's stopped at the line of scrimmage, so they're just stuck. They don't have anything to do. Is that correct? We don't spend this, and our numbers look a lot better at the end of the year.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, big bonus to you for using a football analogy. That's awesome. And yeah, I would equate it to a free safety. That's a good analogy. It's there for unplanned emergencies or unplanned expenditures, things that we just could not or just weren't able to necessarily accurately forecast during the budget season. It could be a natural disaster that we have to respond to, something of that nature. Typically, thankfully, we don't have very many of those, and so we have not had to rely upon contingency in years past. And so, yes, that does just kind of continue to roll as a healthy reserve or backstop for town operations moving forward into the future.
Thank you. And could we open the CIP presentation? Oh, pardon me, there's an attachment that gives the detail of CIP. I better describe. And could we go to streets and roads? I think it's at the very end. So, you know, we've got some big years coming up in spending in terms of streets and roads. And I'm concerned that we're having to move, you know, $1.5 million this year and then $4 million 3 years in a row. But when I look at these numbers, is $4 million enough? 2 years coming out, we're almost four times as much we're going to be spending on streets and roads as we are this year. Am I missing something? Is there another source of funding for these projects that I'm missing?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I believe there was Deputy Finance Director Gomez referred to this earlier. I believe there was a pretty significant bridge project. I believe it's at 7.657, the La Cañada Bridge Deck Repair, which is in the CIP, but was not in the five-year forecast. And so because we were hoping to receive some either federal or state grant funding for that project. So that was not in the five-year forecast. It is in the CIP, and I believe that's the variance that you're referring to there.
And this makes it very stark to me, at least. If we don't get that money, then we have to move a lot more out of the general fund or the capital fund into the highway fund, correct? We're not planning for $19 million just 2 years from now.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, you're correct. We would have to do some juggling there and potentially look at it. You know, we talked about federal and state grant funding. Depending on the severity of the need, we could also look at bonding as a resource as well.
And if we could scroll down, this will be my last question for this round, but we've got another one there, too, that's a real biggie that we haven't talked about at all, and I advise everybody to take a look. $25 million for Shannon Road widening. Do we have a plan for grant funding or a funding source besides the highway fund, besides HERF money to help us make that happen?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I'm going to defer that question to Public Works Director
Mr. Mayor
Kiesler.
And Councilmember Bowen, that is a project that would be included as part of the RTA Next program.
It's in our RCIP, so is RTA Net money a source for the Oro Valley CIP? Is that what I'm missing?
Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, we need to create an object in our budget for the pass-through of that money. But the majority of that money is RTA Next, with a small contribution by the town.
Thank you for clarifying that. That's my final question.
Other questions? So Mr. Gephardt, I was a little bit surprised at the response to contingency, that 11 million, that it sounded like it was just a pool of funding that wasn't necessarily tied, but in the fund balance report of the tentative budget, it shows there's a chart showing expenditures, contingencies, one of the columns, and it seems to be tied to the very, you know, general fund, highway fund, so forth. Is that, can you just explain what the connection is?
Yeah, sure. Mr. Mayor, members of council. So each fund, depending on inflation or, again, just things that are out of the normal, out of the routine that we wouldn't necessarily plan for or budget for in our budget process, each fund has the ability to have those types of items. And so we do break out contingency across the various funds, just to provide a little bit of flexibility and cushion in case there's something that's emergent that we were not aware of during the budget process that kind of pops that we need to deal with and take advantage of.
And is that contingency? I mean, it doesn't necessarily look to me that it's necessarily tied to the total. So, for example, the water utility fund is at $24 million. The contingency is $500,000.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, members of council. So the contingency is what we feel is just an amount that's appropriate for each fund. You know, again, we have not had a history of dipping in across any of the funds, quite frankly, dipping into that contingency and doing a reallocation. I believe we did one this year in the capital fund, but I think that's the first time in the three plus years that I've been here where that's been necessary. So yeah, it is something that we hope that we don't have to rely upon, but we feel like it's prudent for the funds just to make sure that they are solvent if there is something that is necessary to deal with.
So just using that as an example then, if in the water utility fund of, and I'm just using that because it stands out, and if it exceeded the 500,000, then we have the latitude to pull contingency virtually from any of those other funds.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, members of council, we really wouldn't pull it from the, you know, from other funds and place it into the water fund. What would be probably more appropriate would be to allocate certain costs into other funds where we do have that contingency available. For instance, the capital fund, because, you know, if there was, we'll just use the example, if there was inflation that was going off the rails again and it caused, you know, our NERDS project to be much more, or one of our NERDS projects to be much more costly than what we were expecting, then we could take a look at the capital fund and allocate some of those costs into that fund and rely upon that contingency in that fund to handle that excess.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. So what would trigger you coming back to council for the spend of that contingency money?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, so as we do our forecasting and monitor budget to actual results throughout the year, if we see something that is unanticipated or unexplained or something that just we feel like we don't have the resources in the current budget to deal with appropriately, that's when those requests would come before council. And that is financial policy. That's your policy that you've adopted, that you will you have the authority, you will alone as a collective body have the authority to direct staff based upon our request to direct staff to either reallocate that contingency or not.
Okay, thank you. So by putting it in the budget here, it's just giving us that ability to use it if we need to. But we would still have that opportunity to have the conversation, understand what the need is, understand why, et cetera, correct?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. See no other questions. There's a motion to approve. All in favor, say aye. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you, Dave. And, you know, one of the things that's been very helpful to me is to go through older budgets. And I've noticed that around 2020 or maybe a little earlier than that, our budgeted use of, you know, budgeted amount of contingency has greatly increased. And I believe that was sort of an intentional policy decision. Can you help describe for us as a council and as a town, you know, what are some of the advantages of having a larger contingency in the initial budget?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Council Member Bowen. So typically, again, we've been kind of in this unique environment where we've had a lot of capital project needs, trying to spend down ARPA monies, our $25 million Parks and Rec bond issuance. So we've had kind of a higher load of capital needs. So that's certainly played into that. Additionally, just in the inflationary environment, it's been very hard and difficult, and we've heard this from our Director Kiesler in the past and prior meetings. It's been very hard to predict some of those capital projects. I mean, we've kind of had some engineers' estimates, and then when we went out to bid, the bid came in much higher than what the engineers' estimates were. We even heard that in the water utility. It's like the NERDS project, we kind of placed that on hold because the estimates, the bids came in so much higher than what we were expecting. So those are kind of the issues that we've been dealing with in this high inflationary environment. We're hoping and we're starting to see that come down a little bit. We're hoping that downward path of inflation continues, but we still feel that it's prudent to have a healthy contingency for this upcoming budget because inflation is still out there and is still impacting prices.
And then one other aspect of fine art of budgeting and reporting that I want to understand a little bit better. When we run over in a certain line item account, you know, we're going to spend more than we even budget 100% for the year. It seems like we have two options that I've heard of recently. One is we could reach into contingency. You could come to council. It's like, I need some contingency to make it to the end of the year. But I've also been hearing something I don't understand as well, and that is maybe we have a related other line item that's underrunning significantly. And, you know, we look at it like two combined line items that are actually, you know, underrun for the year. Can you explain to us a little bit about the decision process of when you decide to, you know, combine light items to get us to the end of the year versus when you would come to us for contingency?
Sure, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. So as we look at, we'll just use the capital fund as an example. As we look at the capital fund, you know, the majority of the costs in that fund or expenditures or outlays in that fund are capital projects, CIP projects specifically. We try to be very conservative on the expenditure side in our budget process to allow some natural flexibility for inflation and things that we change orders and things that we don't necessarily anticipate once our contractor or we get into a certain project. So there's that, but then some things just naturally do run over, as you mentioned, that we just can't control or are not able to adequately control. So as we look across all the projects, staff has the ability to look at those projects that are underutilized, that have come in and they've completed and they're under budget. That's just capacity that we have the ability to reallocate internally and not come back to council. We're not exceeding the budget for that fund or the total capital expenditures for that fund necessarily, although we could be, but typically what's happening is we've got enough underutilized capacity. We've been conservative enough in our budgeting for certain projects to where we can reallocate some of that capacity into projects that are running a little bit hot where we know there's going to be an overage.
So we allow for some discretion as long as both line items are in the same fund. We can kind of make them work together.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that's correct.
And then one final question. One thing that I had been learning the last couple of months, it was a little bit dismaying to me, was how much in reporting of CIP projects, we weren't really able to get the full picture of what was going on because we had been invoiced, but we didn't know the amount of the invoice. Or, you know what I'm saying, is like, oh, that work's done, but I won't know how much it costs for 3 months. Can you help elaborate a little bit what some of the difficulties I might not see?
Yeah, sure. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. So what you're referring to is we do report on our CIP projects on a quarterly basis, and sometimes those reports, there's a timing lag between when the vendor or a contractor invoices the town and when the project is actually complete and the work has been done. And so oftentimes, or not oftentimes, sometimes it happens to where we will list a project. That project, the work will be complete as of March 31, for example, but we will wait until April, May, maybe even June, depending on the contractor and how delayed they are in their billing process before we see the final closeout of those bills and those invoices. And so there's that disconnect there between the actual reporting of the financial results of that project and when it's closed out and the notes or what, you know, because often we're noting that those projects are complete, and they are complete in terms of an actual work performed on an actual work performed basis. But in terms of a financial basis, there's a delay and a lag, not necessarily in our control. It's more typically the contractor, the vendor, and how they're delayed in their billing process.
And thank you. I think the source of my dismay is seeing status that says work is complete. And that might just be me, but then that tells me, oh, I don't have to look at that anymore. But I found in the next report sometimes, no, a lot of money comes in. And I just think that, honestly, the rationale and analysis, it takes a little extra time. And I know I'm asking the staff to do something they might not necessarily enjoy doing, but it helps a decision maker so much to understand. Because it really is different. Work is complete and it's all paid for is one thing. Mm-hmm. Work is complete and it's not paid for is something else. And thank you for your efforts, Mr. Gephardt. Thank you to your whole department. And those are my questions.
Thank you.
Any other questions, discussion? Mr. Gephardt, thank you for your presentation. Of course, all the work of the executive team and other staff members, we certainly appreciate it. Again, there's a motion to approve. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Future agenda items? Seeing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Solomon. All in favor, say aye.
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 Good night, everyone.